for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 346 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, I welcome back Alethea Van Holland, and she has with her Jax Jobert, and they are the creators of Bad Luck, a fun supernatural book from In Beyond Studios, and it's perfect for the upcoming Halloween season, since it's got incubuses and witches and all kinds of amazing things. And we talk about the series and why it's set in the time period it is, as well as the various characters, each one playing a role in the story. It's good stuff. I really enjoyed the book. Of course, I've read Alethea's stuff before, and it's great to meet Jax for the first time. But you're going to read a great story if you get a hold of it, and they'll give you the web address to get the comic, as well as other places you can access Bad Luck. They've got a lot of interesting things to say about creating indie comics, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they have to say. A word of warning, I had a serious case of hiccups going on when we recorded this interview, so you may hear that a time or two during this conversation. But not too many, I hope. There's a lot to get through this episode, so let's get to it. It's great to welcome back to the podcast Alethea Van Holland, and to welcome to the podcast Jax Jobert. And Alethea, of course, this time you're writing, is my understanding, in a new book called Bad Luck. Is that because last time I think I talked with you, you did both the writing and the art.
Yeah, for Moonlit Dawn, I did both the writing and the art, but for Bad Luck, Jack and I are co-creating, so we're both writing, and I'm doing the artwork, and he's doing the lettering on Bad Luck.
Oh, okay, I gotcha. So you're co-writing.
Yep, we're both equal buddies on this thing.
Yep. Yeah, we are.
Okay, well, why don't you start telling us a little bit about what the story's about, Alethea, and then we'll get into how you guys work together on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So Bad Luck is set in an alternate 1950s America where witches, demons, magic is all real. And there's this witch, Ava, who's the main character, and she accidentally summons a demon, precisely an incubus named Oliver. And he doesn't want to be her familiar because she did a familiar ritual. Mm. And so they have to essentially go on this big, long quest that's an ancient quest to get all these rare components to break the familiar bond so it can set him free. But, you know, it's not easy as it all sounds to be. There is this group called the Harvesters that are hunting witches like Ava down, and they have to avoid them. But unfortunately, the leader of the Harvesters has taken a very high interest in both Ava and Oliver. So they have to avoid them at all costs and try to make their journey a success.
Now, where does this take place?
It initially takes place in San Francisco, California, but they're going to be traveling all over the world, so they're not going to be just set in one setting. We'll be seeing many, we're going to explore different cultures, different locations, just so that it never gets boring or stagnant.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jack, how do you guys work together on the plot then, if this is some, because, you know, normally a writer will do it and they'll give the plot to the artist, but this time you guys are working together on that. How do you guys do that?
Oh, we talk a lot, and we don't really have this time where we just sit down and we're like, okay, we're going to work on it. We talk almost every day, sending ideas, bouncing ideas back and forth, and the next thing you know, we've said, okay, we really like this idea, we really like this plot line, we put the plot points in, and then I do a lot, I'll mock up basically what's going to be said in the comic, then she looks at it, we both edit it, we both approve it, and then we move forward from there.
Now, this book is black and white, and of course, that's one of the reasons you do a black and white book is to cut costs, but as far as, you know, sometimes a story is better told in black and white. Jack, did you guys decide black and white works best?
I think that was part of it. Part of it definitely was the cost and, you know, the time. It's a lot faster to produce a black and white than it is to color and shade. And I personally think it is really, it works in a black and white kind of a noir style. It shows off the darkness of the story and kind of gives it a nice, you know, dark look.
Mm-hmm. Now, I got a kick out of the fact that right at the beginning of the book, there's instructions on how to summon a familiar. Who knew how to summon a familiar, or how did you guys come across that information?
Oh, that was me. Okay. So I kind of took a little bit of like some witchy lore, you know, because, you know, it has witches and witchcraft and everything. So I kind of took a little bit from that, but I mainly added my own things into it.
Okay. Now, is this from personal experience, or is this something that you do research on?
It's heavily researched. That's what Jack and I do. We research a lot of things, and then we just kind of twist it around. We twist it around and add our own flair to it, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you're not you don't have a familiar per se.
You know, I might. My husky, I consider my familiar because he's my shadow, basically.
Oh, guys. Yep, those are doggies is for. They're there to be part of what you're doing. And I always ask people, you know, are you there for them or are they there for you?
And I think
sometimes it depends on the circumstance. It's both ways and stuff like that. So, well, why don't talk about the characters and how you guys develop them. Jack? Why don't you start off and talk about Ava and talk about her?
Well, Ava, I mean, she's a bit quirky. She's incredibly lighthearted, and she's part of what we like to develop with her is that she's the truest friend that you'll ever know, and she kind of sacrifices herself to a fault for her friends and doesn't take herself into consideration time and time again. And, I mean, you even see that in the first book with Oliver being like, I don't want to be your familiar. And she's like, okay, I'll just let that happen rather than saying, no, I summoned you, you're mine now. Mm-hmm. And that's the fun with her. And there's going to be growth with her during the series that, I mean, I'm not going to divulge yet because we haven't gotten there, but you know, that's not the standard always things going better, you know. So a lot of times there's that standard, oh well, a jerk goes and becomes nice, and the nice guy maybe learns not to be a jerk. There's kind of this other thing with her. She learns to take care of herself a little bit, I think, is what we're doing with her.
Well, character growth is a great thing. I love characters that start one place and end in a different place. You're gonna say something?
Oh, I was just gonna say she definitely matures as the series goes on in personality. Like, like some things are going to happen to her that's going to kind of, you know, offset her personality a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, in the first issue, or the second, we come across Beetlebug.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit, Alethea, why don't you talk about Beetlebug at this point?
I love Beetlebug. She was, so with Ava, because of her past, we can't really divulge too much about her past because, you know, we have that issue planned, but we don't have it written out or typed or sketched out or anything yet. Beetlebug is basically a motherly figure to Ava. And, you know, Ava kind of lives with her and everything. And Beetlebug is an incarnation of Lucifer. So she's not Lucifer per se. She's just like an offshoot of him and, you know, shares a consciousness with him. So everything she knows, Lucifer will know and vice versa. But she still has her own personality and her own free will.
I was interested that you chose a female personality for that.
There's a few. I think in the first issue, she insinuates that there's more like her. Mm-hmm. And she's definitely one of the females. And we definitely wanted a motherly figure for Ava to kind of rely on and kind of use as like a role model sort of thing.
Because, mm-hmm. You know, there's the Lucifer show. And then there's all the other kinds of things where they use, like Supernatural has had Lucifer around. And they've always been male. So I was kind of intrigued to see a female version, or at least an aspect of Lucifer.
Yeah. So yeah. We basically took a bunch of names of Lucifer, mm-hmm. like around the world, and we're giving them form. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a lot of them.
And I think there's part of it too, where it's like, these are kind of different branches of the personality. And so, I mean, it's almost impossible to have a character that is 100% only masculine and only that. And that's not what we're trying to portray. We're kind of trying to show that, you know, this entity that they get their magic from has a broad spectrum of personality types and ideas and thoughts.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, yeah, we're trying to expand on, because, you know, Lucifer sort of has this stereotype, cliched look that he's a handsome looking man in a tux suit and everything. We're trying to branch away from that and try to make him more of like Jack said, an entity, kind of an enigma and everything. So we're trying to really turn him into our own thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, why don't you talk a little bit about Oliver, Jack, because he gets real testy if you don't call him by the full name. So why don't you talk a little bit about who his character and his interaction with Ava?
All right. Well, Oliver, I mean, like we said, he's an incubus. And so he's very full of himself, as most demons are. They are their one priority. Well, but they're not really their one priority. Their one priority is their boss. So Lucifer is kind of the king of the demon world, and he allows them to go into the human world and feed and then go back. And that's generally what Oliver would do. He'd go into the human world to feed and he'd come back. Well, he got summoned as a familiar, and now he can't go back. You know, he can't feed the way he usually wants to because he has a tag along. And he's a little bit salty about it. He's just irritated constantly that now he basically has this person that he could care less about. So then he shows up there. Beetlebug's like, hey, you guys are actually stuck together for a while. And he's like, well, what are you talking about? You're acting like this isn't just some person in my way. You're acting like she's important and she doesn't call you by your official name, because that's essentially his boss, his king. And so it kind of takes his world and tips it on its head. And he doesn't know what to do besides just be his salty old self, you know?
Well, I get a kick, too, because artistically, he's dark where she's light, which I found interesting about him, that his head and his horns and everything tends to be dark black, except that he gets down one about the middle of the chest. And she's kind of just the opposite. She's got like what appears to be blonde hair, you know, and she wears a dark like turtleneck or something like that. So it's they're reversed from each other, which I kind of like about that. Was that intentional? I mean, does that to give us a visual cue as to who is who?
A little bit, yes. I modeled Ava a little bit after Alice in Wonderland. And for Oliver, because he's an incubus, you know, he feeds off of the desire of people. That's how he survives. And he even shows in the first issue when a woman looks at him and he looks at himself in a mirror, he's like, oh, so this is how she perceives on me. The blackness of his face is basically a mirror to reflect how you perceive him. So mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now,
it's like a shadow.
Mm-hmm. Which is good, because I like the fact that they're opposites. And of course, opposites attract. So it's a very interesting thing. And of course, this, at one point, he turns into a snake, or he takes on the form of a snake. At the very beginning, when we first see them, she's on a broom, and he wants to land, and he's in the form of a snake, and he talks about how he hates that. Of course, there's a little reference to biblical stuff going on there. he says that snake form is degrading to my beauty, he says, which I thought was really interesting. So I like the fact that you're weaving these different mythologies into the story.
I'm so glad you noticed that.
I love the fact that there's, you know, it's not going to be one thing all the way through. That you're going to, we have to be on our toes and kind of read and watch what's being said and who what they're actually saying. So I like that about the story quite a lot. I think that there's a lot of really good things going on, and we have to pay attention.
Yes, definitely.
So talk to me a little bit more, because Oliver, I think, is one of those really interesting characters. You know, he, as an incubus, I don't know if everybody knows what an incubus is. They live off human energy, basically. And he goes around. We do see a sequence where they go someplace and he has to feed. And so he goes about that. And I it's an interesting way to do it, because everybody has different ideas as to how an incubus actually functions. But you guys have a very straightforward way, which I like.
Yeah, we wanted it definitely to be, well, this is what he does, this is how you do it, we see it, but I mean, it is still kind of, you know, fade to black a little bit. You know, we wanted it to be really clear about how what his motivations are for himself and how he drives. I mean, in that same sequence right afterwards, we see that he's not concerned about Ava getting fed because, well, he just ate. So,
I got a kick out of that because, you know, he's very determined. He's going to eat. When he does, and then she's still hungry, he goes, it's no big deal. And she goes, what? But I'm hungry. And then she says, sorry, now we got to leave. And that's why they go to Beetlebug's house is because of that, because she's really hungry. Was Beetlebug designed to be, following some person's look, or was that kind of up to you guys? Did you guys imagine her on your own?
Yeah, sort of. Because she's an incarnation of Lucifer, I wanted her to look somewhat demonic. So, you know, that's why she has the slitted irises and, you know, the fang teeth and everything. But, I mean, concerning her, like, poodle skirt and curly hair, like, I don't know, like, it's set in the 1950s, and for some reason, for Beetlebug and her motherly nature, that just popped into our heads, and it worked.
Well, I got a kick out of what Oliver says at one point. He says, I didn't expect an incarnation of Lucifer to be so nice. He goes, so, you know, one of the things that you're doing in this book a lot is you are changing, you know, the perspective or going down a different road than what we expect, and I like that. That makes the story an interesting read.
Thank you. That's our goal. It's like to kind of, we expect everything to be evil, even though we're seeing it, you know, through the bad guy's eyes. Because essentially, you know, Ava's, you know, she's in league with demons. So you would think that everything's bad and evil, but we're seeing it through her perspective, essentially. And, you know, it's just sort of changing things from black and white to shades of gray, which is kind of ironic because the comic isn't black and white.
See, what's interesting, though, is that you're also setting this in the 1950s, a time in which almost everything was black and white. You know, again, you're changing the dynamic that we expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that works because we're setting it in an alternate America, an alternate universe, essentially. And so we're able to have a lot more freedom in what we want to change.
Well, again, you're going to play with our expectations, too, which I really like. I think that's really important.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to regurgitate the same story 1,000 people have told, you know, because it's hard to find original concepts and keep in it original and keep it fresh and keep it from people going, okay, well, I predicted that. Why am I reading this? I can tell you what the ending's going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, there's sometimes where you look at it, you go, okay, I predicted the ending, but I still enjoyed the ride, which is okay. But there's so much of it where it's a lot more complicated than you think it is.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the end of the book, I'm kind of fascinated by the fact that you have each episode has like a journal entry in it. Do you guys share in the writing of that, or is there one of you that kind of takes to that pretty much? How do you develop the journal entries?
Basically, that's me that's doing it, and I just try and get in the mind of Ava as much as possible. Like, what would she say here? And, you know, also try and throw in some of the 1950s slang words and everything. And then I usually send it to Jack for review. Like, does this make sense? Is this cohesive? Is this upbeat enough? You know, sort of like, is it setting the tone? You know, sort of like a overview of what happened in the issue or something. Sort of like her perspective. And there's a reason for it, and it'll be explained later in the series.
Now, in the second issue, you get into harvesters a lot more. And I'm just kind of fascinated by how you set them up. Talk a little bit more about who the harvesters are and what their relationship is to humanity.
Well, the harvesters are kind of the protectors of humanity. They're kind of set up not as police. I mean, they're not like an official, like, government-sanctioned thing. They're more of like a religious police, you might say, in a way. They're basically the ones that would have orchestrated things like witch hunts and things like that. They've got a little bit of their own secret society thing going on, but we use a lot of showing the propaganda to show that the general public sees them as kind of their neighborhood watch, and they're not only helpful out in witches, but they help out all sorts of different things. I think in the second issue, we see some of them handing a homeless man food. And, you know, they're patrolling as kids are trick-or-treating for Halloween and things like that. You know, and people are happy to see them. It's really the witches themselves specifically who need to be afraid of the harvesters.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a part in which you talk about the fact that the harvesters use the power that witches have but to better humanity is the way that you say it. And so I'm
right.
I found that a real interesting thing, that the humanity itself doesn't do all these things. It's the harvesters that do that. I found that a real interesting concept because I'd never seen that before. So, you know, moving forward with that, that's going to be real interesting to see because it sounds like they're on the verge of trying to do something.
Yes, that's definitely true. They've got ideas and they've been feeding this in. So we get kind of into a conspiracy theory type situation where, you know, they create the technology and then they release it to the general public. They create the medicine and they help humanity with it. But they themselves don't have to sacrifice their own soul to obtain the magic to make those advances. And so they found a way to use the witches that they didn't want in society.
See, I'm kind of fascinated because on some levels, the harvesters appear to be human. I don't know if it's giving away too much to ask, are they actually human?
I don't think it's too much to ask, and most of them are. That is the answer there. Most of them are.
Okay, so some of them are not, so I guess we're going to find that out as we read the story.
Right, right.
Okay, I don't want to get in there because I think there's spoilers coming right there. That's a place in which the story is going to tell that we have to read. It's one of those times when you have to get the book and read it.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And also in the second book, we come across a character that goes a very different route from Ava. And I'm real happy about that. And there's a summoning that goes on and it changes a guy pretty well. And I like the fact that, again, there's a contrast going on here, which I really liked. And I don't want, again, there's something I don't think we want to spoil too much because that's in the second issue. But what happens is instead of the friendly stuff that goes on with Ava and Oliver, you get a very different kind of take on it.
Oh, yeah, very different.
So we're going to see, obviously, these guys come in conflict at some point.
Right. Those two are, I mean, they're very stark. They're kind of the what if. So, you know, you take Oliver and Ava who kind of clash and butt heads, but in a comical way. And you take these two and it's like, well, what if it wasn't comedy? What if there was a power struggle? And that's kind of where we can see. I mean, that character specifically, I mean, he is a harvester. And so he's a harvester. He clearly has a familiar situation as well with a demon. I mean, it's a parallel with Ava and Oliver. That's not that much. But there's fear there. There's power struggle, which Ava and Oliver don't have.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's one art thing that I wanted to ask about for sure, because there's, you know, there's every once in a while, Ava's face kind of goes anime-like. You know, her nose disappears and she's got her, instead of having a pupils in the eye, it's kind of reversed. It's a black eye with white pupils in it. Is that to kind of feed on the anime and kind of touch that art style?
Yeah, that's only really used in super comical moments. We kind of did it with Oliver a little bit too in first issue when she first summons him, you know, the flashback and everything. And he even has like his like little chibi eyes, you know. It's just there for comedic things, so.
Mm-hmm. Which is nice. It's nice to see the art style shake up a little bit like that. So I like that about the book. I like the fact that the art, It isn't standard from thing to thing. You vary the size of the panels and the number of panels and everything like that. So it's really, really good. In that sense that visually it's interesting as well as reading the story.
Thank you.
Do you guys, I mean, how do you settle on that? Do you guys kind of talk it out and then kind of figure how many panels you want? Or does whoever gets to lay that page out do that?
So a lot of it goes into writing and both layout, sketch layout. I mean,
yeah, pretty much what happens is Jack, you know, once we settle on what's going to happen in the issue, Jack takes the reins and writes it out. And then after we're done editing it, changing things around, then I will go and sketch it. But sometimes, you know, Jack kind of writes it in like a standard, like five panels per page.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if I feel like adding in more panels, then I will, you know, or combining panels or doing a splash page instead. And we'll just adjust accordingly to the script with that. So it's like we have a basic foundation, but a lot of things get changed along the process, and then we both review it and see if we like it, and then we continue on to the inking and the finishing touches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it adds a hint of being able to do a little bit of improv with some things, which is part of the fun of it, you know, letting the artist really take off with the art and be like, I feel inspired to add just this little bit here. Well, then do it. And it's worked out great so far.
Mm, great. Because that give and take, you know, when it works well, it just makes a book so much better. So many groups that doesn't work with. I mean, people do not, you know, I'm the writer and you're going to write what you're going to draw what I tell you to draw. Those don't work for me. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, I've definitely worked on projects where the writer gives me a script and they want me to stay perfect to the script. And I will, you know, because it's their story and they're paying me to just draw it. But like with Bad Luck, because you know, Jack and I are co-creators, I'm able to have so much more freedom. And it's just a lot of fun because we don't really have a lot of bars and a lot of rules. We just kind of let everything flow. Like I think in issue two, those two characters were in Oliver's laying under the tree, mm-hmm. and they're talking to him. That was totally added when I was drawing it. That wasn't in the script originally. So I was
that
what
was
do you think about this?
Totally improv, and it was perfect. It works great.
Because I think of a certain creator in Hollywood who used to write the scripts, and what he would do is he would send it down to the sound stage and stuff, and they would shoot it exactly as he had written it. There was no debate. But I've always kind of thought that a discussion is something you get. Jack, you might see something that maybe Alethea doesn't notice right away, and you can make the story better by doing that. And I always think that's a great way to do it. So I applaud you guys for working together and making the book that the best you want.
Yeah, and I think that's always been our goal together. Is it's not about who wins. It's about getting the best story we can create and telling our story in the most entertaining way possible.
Mm-hmm. I used to sing in a choir, and I used to always fuss at certain parts of the choir. You know, there's soprano, alto, tenor, and bass. And what happened is one of the sections would go off key or something, and they would sit there and say, nobody cared. And I'd say, you know, they wouldn't look and say, most people wouldn't know that it was, say, the tenor section that was off. They would say the choir didn't sound very good. You know,
right.
Everybody takes the blame for it. So I was always telling people, you know, don't think that you're getting away with something because somebody else is not doing it right. So it's that way with this. I always think that when the two you guys are in sync, then it really works out so much better as a story.
That's true. It's definitely 100% true. And that's all the communication. I mean, we constantly communicate back and forth about this. And if that doesn't work for one of us, and yet that person's answers, you know, if I have an idea and Alethea is like, hey, that's not working for me, we find a compromise on it. We don't just go, well, it doesn't work for you, but it works for me, so we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. So the first two issues I've seen, how far are you along on issue three?
We have it written, but I'm going to start sketching it probably in the next week or so. Mm-hmm. But it shouldn't take too long. But we have all the way to the last issue planned out. We have pages and pages of outlines of highlights and keynotes that are going to happen, you know, all the way to the last issue. And I think we have up to issue 5 already written, don't we? It just needs to be edited.
Yeah, I just need to finish up the script for issue 5.
Okay, so you got 5 issues in the tank. How many issues did you have in the story planned?
Well, for Bad Luck, we got 20 issues planned.
Okay.
And then we're going to do a spinoff, which is going to take place in the same timeline. It's called Bad Luck Chronicles, and that's going to probably be around 10-ish issues, give or take.
Yeah.
We're not exactly sure yet.
Okay. Now, if somebody wants to get a hold of Bad Luck, I mean, they may not be able to get that PDF from you like I did. How would they get a hold of copies of Bad Luck?
Well, right now they can read it for free as a webcomic through the official website, badluckcomic.com. Or they can read it through our publisher's website, you know, nbeyond.com/badluck. Digital download is available for 99 cents for both issues. And our publisher does go to conventions where he sells physical copies. Actually, I believe on August 25th, NBeyondCon in New York, and that Bad Luck making its premiere debut. I believe if there's any extra copies, they might put it in the store, or they might just keep for future conventions. Not exactly sure.
So, what about you guys? Are you guys going to go to conventions anytime soon?
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to be at a convention, you know, a huge convention here in Alaska called SenchiCon, and it's taking place, I believe, September 21st through the 23rd, and I'll be selling Bad Luck copies there, physical copies, along with buttons that I'll be making, that I'll be handing out with copies. And then InBeyond will be going to another convention in October for New York Comic Con, and I'm sure they'll be selling Bad Luck there. And then next year, I'll be moving to Oregon, the same state where Jack lives, and we'll be hitting the conventions there. So
yeah, we'll jump on that circuit as soon as she gets down here.
I'm kind of curious, why are you leaving Alaska?
My husband's getting out of the military, so we're going to head home.
Oh, wow. Okay. Very good. That'll work out real well. As, you know, I have to say, I always put a pitch in for New York Comic Con because that's one of my favorites. There's so much that goes on behind the scenes. There are so many deals in the future and things. A lot of it takes place behind the scenes. Not only can you buy great product, but you can also develop and make relationships there, which I just think is just one of the greatest things.
Yeah, that's what I love about the comic world, is making all these connections and meeting all these wonderful, talented people.
Mm-hmm. That's great stuff. Well, what else you guys got working on? How about you, Alethea? I imagine that this isn't the only thing you're working on. What else have you got happening?
A lot. Aside from my own projects, I'm a comic artist for several writers and publishers. Where do I even begin? I'm working on my own webcomic. It's something I do solo. It's called Between the Realms, and it's a LGBTQ fantasy romance webcomic series. And then, I'm working on Moonlit Dawn. I had to find a new publisher because, unfortunately, Insane Comics shut down a few months ago. But that's okay. Right. But that's okay. I got a new publisher for that one. So I'm currently trying to convert everything over to them.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, I signed with Ovon Comics, which is an upcoming publisher, and I'm working on a comic with one of them. And then I'm a colorist for Fire Girl, which is a superhero comic book series, who a portion of the proceeds goes towards autism awareness and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a bunch of other studios I'm working with that I can't name off the top of my head right now.
Goodness. I think I've seen Fire Girl here in Florida, where I'm based.
Yeah. That's actually where it's based.
Yeah, I've seen it because I every once in a while as I go to stores and stuff like that, I'm always looking for good indie stuff. And I haven't had the time to pick it up yet, but I'll have to go and get that since you're involved with it. I'll pick it up next time I see it. So, okay, how about you, Jack? What else have you got going on?
Right now, this is pretty much it. I'm just kind of getting started in the comic thing. I've mostly just been a at-home kind of hobbyist writer. I've written, I mean, I haven't really published that much. I used to have some poems published and stuff when I was a kid, but this is kind of my new comeback into the writing world. Mostly other than that, I have my day job that I have to do and takes up a lot of my time.
Yep. That's real life does to us. You know, it gets in the way of comics a lot.
Yeah, it does.
Unfortunately. But so how did you guys get to know each other? I don't know, because you're in Oregon and she's in Alaska. Do you guys know each other before, maybe college or something?
Oh, yeah. Jack and I used to go to the same high school because I'm originally from Oregon.
Right, right.
And so we've known each other since...
Oh, for years.
Freshman year of high school? We consider each other siblings at this point.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. We get together, we're like puppies squabbling.
Well, that's good. But see, all that creative force starts to now starting to take some kind of shape, which is great. It takes a little while for those things to happen. But this is a fun book, Bad Luck. Are you guys planning to get this into Diamond? Is InBeyond is part of Diamond? How's that going to work?
I mean, I don't know any plans for Diamond just yet. I know we're working on, it's been submitted to Comixology. We're just waiting for feedback for it to be accepted or anything.
Mm-hmm.
We do know that once we get the first 5 books finished, there's a possibility it could be in trade paperback, and that could allow more possibilities. But we don't know the details yet.
Well, it's getting started, so yep. It takes a little while for those to happen. Comixology is real persnickety about their files and stuff like that. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping that you've got to get the resolution exactly right. As somebody who has submitted stuff to Comixology and had things rejected, you've got to make sure the resolution is high enough for them. That seems to be biggest thing of their concern. So I'm always fussing with people giving me files that aren't high enough res. I've got to keep telling them, this isn't it. You know, it's not going to make it. They're not going to allow it.
Right.
Let's hope. I mean, have you gotten any word that they've accepted it yet? Or how's that? Have you gotten any word from them at all?
I believe our publisher just sent them like a few weeks ago, and we won't hear anything back for maybe a month or two.
Okay.
So.
Well, patience is a virtue, and you'll have to wait and see what they do. If they'll usually tell you that it was resolution that was if it gets rejected. So just keep an eyeball on that, and just get the highest res you can give it, and let them do it. Is all you can do with that. So with that Comixology, I haven't talked about Comixology in a while. Let me just do a quick thing on that, because I always like to think that Comixology is like a great big newsstand where all the books you can possibly get are all together. And what it does is your book will have the same amount of space that Action Comics has, which I think is a cool thing. I always love that. Many's the time, if I have a little extra money, I will go through and I will try to see books that I have not read before and go after them. Let's say it's 99 cents or something. I get a chance to poke at it and take a read of it. So I always like that. And so that's I think that Comixology is a great way to do it. You don't make a lot of money on Comixology if you're planning on getting rich with it. I hope you're not holding your breath, because it's not going to work like that. It's the exposure. I think that's the main important thing about Comixology. So I think you're making a smart move to get into there. I would recommend Diamond next, if in beyond. I don't know what their relationship with Diamond is. I haven't heard anything about that, but it would be nice to be able to get into stores, because there are some stores that are big on indie comics. So it would be nice to get them out there and to get it where more people can read it. You know, I was just talking to you. I noticed on the cover that Oliver is actually reddish. I thought it was black and white, but he's actually reddish when he's not black. So I find that interesting. I didn't notice that before. So
he's an incubus. He's all about passion and desire, and red, oranges, colors are kind of coinciding with that. So it's everything has a reason.
Everything. There are no throwaway lines.
Exactly.
If you guys came across more money, would you want to get somebody to color it?
I mean, we'd be open to that. Yeah.
I think so. I think if we got to a point there, it might be one of those things that when we're finally finished with everything, we might go back through and say, hey, let's release a couple colored issues. You know, and see if people, if they really want it, then we'll do it.
Well, this is the kind of story I think color would really help a little bit. I mean, it's not that it's bad in the black and white format. I really like the black and white format. But I would like to see the color. I don't know, these days, if you're not the Turtles, you're black and white. Sometimes some people just look at it, black and white, I can't get it. So I'd hate for you to lose readers by having to, you know, for it being black and white.
Right.
So that's the thing. But it's something right now you're doing the best you can with it, and that's really all you can do right at the moment. So, okay, so you got issues 1 and 2 done. Issue number 3, you said you're coming along nicely. Do you know when issue number 3 is going to be finished?
It takes usually about 2 months. It takes a month to sketch it, then it takes a month to ink it, then it takes maybe a couple weeks to format it and letter it, and then we send it off to our publisher. So it might be out, hopefully, in November-ish.
Oh, if you could get it before Halloween.
That's kind of our hope.
that's our hope, but I am swamped, so I will see if I can.
You know, in the future, too, because they have that Halloween fest thing. Sometime in the future, if you guys could consider having one of your issues coming out with that, maybe that'd be a good time to put a colored first issue out, would be to have it be part of Halloween fest. That would be fun.
Halloween Fest, I don't think I've heard of that.
Me neither.
You know what Free Comic Book Day is?
Yeah.
Okay, what they've tried to do now is make a second one in the year, and that's Halloween. And like a lot of the stores will do it, and what they will do is just like Free Comic Book Day, they will give out free comics. And of course, it's not really free. The stores have to pay like a quarter or something each to get them. But they'll have like a Halloween celebration, like say the Wednesday before, or maybe on the weekend of Halloween, and they will have candy and they will have costumes and all kinds of stuff for Halloween. They're trying to have a second Free Comic Book Day, because Free Comic Book Day is so big and popular right now that they need another one in the fall to be able to do that. So that's what's kind of going on with that. So if you ever get a chance, I would highly recommend maybe do the first issue or maybe the first two issues and get them in color and put them out next year. Of course, you have to plan far in advance for these good things. So I would just say that think about that for next year. You know, if you don't do it, if you can't do it, that's fine. But I would say think about that, because your story would land perfectly for that.
Yeah, it would.
That's something to keep in mind. Thank you very much for the advice, Wayne.
After a while, you've been fumbling around in the comics industry as long as I have. You pick up a thing or two on those things. So it's called Bad Luck. And what's the website you go to if you want to get it?
It's www.badluckcomic.com.
Okay. And I've read one and two, and I highly recommend them. And especially now that we're getting into the Halloween season, I would highly recommend getting this, especially if you've got somebody who's really interested in these kinds of things. It's a perfect comic for that. So I think you guys are doing a great job. And, you know, keep it up. And I'm looking forward to seeing number three. When I find out that's out, I'll be after it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Please be back next time when I'll be speaking with another great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.